Hey there, guys. Welcome back. This is the April episode of Classic Camera Revival. And today we're going to be talking about a fairly iconic camera manufacturer. If you've read the title of the episode right, it's the K-Team, which means we're talking Pentax. And you're probably thinking, oh man, it's going to be talking about the K1000. Everyone talks about the K1000, blah, blah, blah. Well, I have a little surprise for you. We're avoiding the K1000 in this episode. So, let's get rolling.
Coming to you live from Toronto, Canada, this is the Classic Camera Revival. If you don't have gear acquisition syndrome now, you certainly will after listening to our show.
Well, let's take this chronologically, and we're going to start with one of the very early Pentax cameras, well before they even had the K mount, back when they were still using the good old Universal M42 mount. So, Mike, take it away.
Okay, so I've got in my hands my first camera I ever actually purchased, which is the Pentax Spotmatic SP, 1964 model. So this one's pretty darned old. And honestly, I don't believe this camera has ever been CLA'd once, yet it is still running exactly as you'd expect it to if you just bought it right off the shelf in 64, took it out of the box, mounted your lens, and you'd be off to the races. It's just pure magic clockwork. It's fantastic. It even sounds good when you shoot it. Feels really good in the hand. And honestly, it's easily taken place of many other cameras in my collection, and it's probably one of my first go-to cameras when I shoot 35. Now, this did eventually turn into the Spotmatic F, which was really, really neat because it was M42 mount, but they added that little iconic arm inside the lens that allowed for open aperture metering, which had the coupling on the Pentax Spotmatic F. So you keep your aperture open, it would meter exactly as you'd expect on these old cameras with the match needle, and you just adjust your aperture and go from there. Like, granted, it was still fully manual. You adjust your aperture, adjust your shutter, and it would go from there. But afterwards, this camera, they refined that after the F, went to the K mount, which we all know where that led to.
I want to talk about the lenses that were on the Spotmatics, the Tacumars. Those are just something else, and slightly radioactive if you get the right one.
Well, I've got here the 50-1.4 Tacumar, which is a radioactive lens. I got this from a gentleman in the U.S., Jose Soto. And he sent this up to me. He told me he already treated it with the good old UV light to get rid of the yellow ink. But if you take a look through the lens, you can see that it's coming back. And honestly, this time I'm not going to change it. I'm going to let it yellow. And that sounds really bad. If it's yellow, let it mellow, I guess. Yeah sure. And basically turn this into a straight black and white lens.
Perfect. Actually, the super multi-coated Tacumar, say that really fast, 51.4s are the classic Pentax screw mount lens. They give Leica lenses a run for their money. In fact, people kind of look at them and they can't tell the difference. And the build quality on those lenses are just mind-boggling.
Yeah, because I remember I gave John a SuperTac
55.18.
And honestly, the first time I held that lens before I'd given it away, I have never felt a lens that focuses as good as that, ever. It is just so smooth. I mean, the 51.4, exactly the same. I've tried out a 135-3.5, and the focus is always the same. It is super smooth. Yeah. It's like they were just built yesterday, and you're sitting there and using it. It's just perfect. No binding, nothing, no grabbing. Shoot it in cold weather and the gel or the grease doesn't even gel up. Perfect.
And anyone who's a part of the Emulsive Secret Santa will probably be ending up with mine in the winter. So we're just going to segue right into Mr. Bill Smith and the Pentax KX.
Thank you, Alex. The Pentax KX. Well, just to add to Mike a bit. You had the Pentax Spotmatic F. It actually became the Pentax KM, which was this sort of mid-range. You had the K1000, which was the cheap and cheerful, this sort of Volkswagen Beetle. And then you had the KX, which was the high-end model. It had mirror lockup and, of course, depth of field preview. It is a jewel of a camera. I have two of them. I have a chrome one, and of course, I got this lovely black one with what I call the Lenny Kravitz finish.
Brassing.
It's bang on. And again, the meter in the KX is very different than the Spotmatic F. You look inside, it actually looks more like a Nikon FE. So it's match needle, you got the shutter speeds, but it's not aperture priority. It's a mechanical camera. And ironically enough, they do come in, on average, cheaper than a K1000. And the problem with K1000s out there, to quote a local camera pusher, they're kind of like old Crown Vic taxi cabs. They've been run into the dirt a few times. Yeah. Whereas KXs, by and large, well, this one accepted that I have in my hot little hands. You'll see the photo on the website later. Mostly they went to advanced amateurs, so they've been probably a lot more babied over time. And of course, on the lens here, I got the K-Mount M 51.7, which is a really sharp piece of glass. Now, they have a three generations of manual focus lenses. You got the generic one, which came out with the KX, KM, K1000. And then the M lenses came out for the ME and the MX, which I'm not talking about today, but I got an example on the table as well. It's kind of like a KX, but it's missing the depth of field preview. And it's smaller.
Yeah. Pentax really did get stuff right. And unfortunately, like Minolta and Olympus, they ended up being overshadowed by Canon and Nikon.
Yeah. Well, it still happens today. I mean, You've got that new Pentax K1 full-frame DSLR, and I find that when you look at Canon's DSLRs, they've got the smooth prism hump, same with Nikon, but Pentax seems to have gone with the angular, which is really sweet.
And I have a conversation with a few camera retailers, and they say that even best bang for buck for a full-frame DSLR these days is the K1.
Yeah, definitely. So moving right along, more of a tinier entry into the Pentax line, and one I've had pleasure of using both the ME, which John will be talking about, and the ME Super. The only trouble is that my ME kind of met an unfortunate end, and probably is still lying rotting at the bottom of a silo of the abandoned canned malting plant in Toronto. So, on that note, in a much more intact Pentax ME, let's take it away to John.
Okay, so I have a Pentax ME. It's from the late 1970s, and I think it was pretty obvious what Pentax was trying to do here. They were seeing the success that Olympus had with their small form factor SLRs, and so out came the ME, which was the automatic, and the MX, I believe, which was match needle when it first came out. And the ME is a nice little camera. In some ways, it reminds me feature-wise of the Nikon EM in that it doesn't have a whole lot of extra functionality. It is automatic only. There is no manual mode. So all you can do if you want to shoot manual, there's one mechanical speed, which is 1/100th, or all you're doing is using the exposure compensation to try and adjust for exposure. Also, there is no depth of field preview. So you're basically stuck with what you're seeing through the glass. Speaking of glass, the finder I find is very nice. It's a very big finder. If you wear glasses like I do, it's almost too big. I find myself having to sort of move my eyes around to check out the shutter speed display in the viewfinder, which is nice. Just a nice little row of LEDs, plain, simple, unambiguous. I like it. Something else, I guess, and this is probably a price point thing, is that the aperture is not shown in the viewfinder, just the shutter. Now, one thing I've noticed, then this might be more of an issue with the ME Super, because I have had a couple of ME Supers. I gave one away to a model. I have no idea if she's using it or not. The other one I had, the meter went wonky, especially as soon as you adjusted the exposure compensation, the meter would just go crazy in terms of being off. And they, I've looked up online, it's a common problem. They suggest, you know, the usual, you know, just basically pour alcohol into it until it gets better. Mine didn't get better. And also I was checking on the big auction site this morning just trying to get an idea of what ME prices are. And for whatever reason, a lot of the listings, I'd say the majority of the listings were saying four parts not working, defect in for the German ones. So it's a nice camera. I would just be a bit nervous buying another one because I'm just not sure of the reliability at this point, because it is like a, you know, a 30 plus year old electronic camera.
Well, I think the issue with pouring the alcohol into the camera not work, or well, pouring the alcohol basically until it works, I think the issue is they were talking about pouring it into the meter and not into yourself.
Well, but that, but the thing is, Mike, that second remedy always works. it either fixes the problem or it gives you a new problem to worry about.
Yeah,
you no longer care about the original problem.
You just stop working, period. Before we step away from the 35 millimeters, one thing that Pentax really did in all their cameras, from the M42 screw mounts to the K mounts, is that they really wanted to push a universal mount, right? M42, you have so many options on M42, and the lenses work across the board. I mean, we've probably talked about the Helios lens that's available in M42. I use it on my digital camera for video work, and it's just incredible.
Well, especially since it's a clickless aperture, it's perfect. Yeah. Like, that's awesome.
And even the K-mount, there are plenty of non-Pentax cameras out there that uses the K-mount, like the Ricoh, and Sears uses the K-mount. And Cosina, exactly. There's just, they truly wanted to help universalize the SLR market. Unfortunately, that didn't work, but they continue to use that mount up even today on their DSLRs. You can take your old fantastic SMC Pentax M's, A's lenses, throw it onto your digital camera, and it works perfectly. But in addition to the 35mm, Pentax made a series of very successful and often underdog in the medium format market. And probably the camera that really got me on the road to medium format would be the Pentax 645, a camera I sold simply because I wasn't using it anymore. But this was my point-and-shoot medium format. It was heavy, but it was well-balanced. And unlike offerings from Mamiya and Bronica, this wasn't a system camera. You had your built-in eye level finder, you have inserts, you can't really modify it. There's built-in motor drive and everything. And with the 6cm by 4.5cm format, you got 15 shots on your roll, right? Double that if you were running 220. But these days there's not much in the way of 220 film kicking around, especially in black and white. So definitely if you do decide to pick one up, and that's just the 645, you had the 645N and N2 that brought about autofocus and matrix metering, which is just incredible. And they can be had for a song.
Yeah, especially if you consider their competition, like the Mamiya 645.
Exactly.
The Mamiya is actually a little more pricey.
Yeah.
Contax.
Oh, well, we're not even... Yeah, Contax is a whole other system. That's nuts.
But probably the strongest lens for the Pentax 645 was the 35mm f3.5, the wide-angle lens for it. And it basically lived on the camera when I was shooting it, because it had zero distortion and it was sharp corner to corner. And then there's the tank. And James, how's your back?
My back is slightly compressed.
Got problems with his, the subcipital? Just from carrying this thing around?
Do you need a forklift to, like, move it?
I think we need a bigger table. It is nice to look at. Table.
Yeah. It's a good thing I got the solid wood. No IKEA.
Well, for those that haven't figured out what we're talking about here, is we're talking about the gigantic Pentax 67-2, which is probably, I would say, the sort of pinnacle of technology for Pentax in the film world. It's one of their first system cameras. This camera has an interchangeable prism. You can change the viewfinder glass as well. There's a Polaroid back for this camera that's available, which is slightly strange. This camera, this Polaroid back, actually, once you put it on, you must shoot all 10 exposures of the Polaroid film. Otherwise, you will spoil the
Makes sense.
Exposure. So it's not a removable back for whatever reason. But, you know, this camera here, it's, you know, for those that aren't familiar with it, it's basically a 35mm camera that's, you know...
On steroids.
Overeaten, been to one too many all-you-can-eat buffets. It looks like you can shoot it handheld, and you certainly can with any normal lens or short focal length lenses. But once you get into anywhere, I'd say 150mm and above in focal length, it really does need a tripod. The mirror on this thing is gigantic, and you know, I would say under normal circumstances, this is the kind of camera you would want to have for the zombie apocalypse, except for the fact that when you do trigger the shutter, the mirror and the shutter noise will attract the zombies. But luckily, you can defend them with the gigantic tripod that you must have in hand to use the thing. In fact, the manual for this camera states that the tripod, the head of the tripod, must weigh more than the camera. So, you know, that is some tripod. And I do have a tripod for this, and I basically use my monorail tripod when I'm shooting this camera for landscapes with anything longer than the 55 3.5 that's on it.
No surprise.
Yeah, no surprise there. It is a fully electronic camera. It is an excellent camera for studio work, especially portrait work. You know, it's the exposure compensation dial is very easy to use. It's right on the top of the viewfinder. You know, ergonomically, the design of this camera is fantastic. Like I said, it's really a giant SLR in terms of usability. You know, they are, you can get them at a pretty good price these days. And there's a couple different versions of them. There's the original sort of Pentax SI 67, if you will. And then there's the 67 and then the 67-2. They're all basically the same thing. It's really just a giant camera. The 67-2 has a little bit more of advanced metering on it. It's got spot meter, center weighted, and a matrix mode. And, you know, the shutter speed does go up to 1/1000th, which is pretty good for a camera this size. It's a good camera for doing any outdoor portrait work and that sort of thing. If you, you know, get the right speed film in there and you do want to shoot wide open with it, it is a good camera. Some oddities about it. It has a big giant wooden handle, that comes with the camera, which always puzzles me because it's not like you can carry the damn thing around. So, you know, they did fashion, a cold shoe on top of that handle for some reason, and I guess because there's no shoe for a flash on this camera. But you know, like I said, I now have a bad back. My chiropractor loves this camera. You know, I think he's getting a kick out of it. You know what? It's a great camera. Anyone looking to venture into the medium format world and still wants the familiarity of a 35mm body, it's definitely a way to go, and certainly one you should play around with.
In the newer model like you have, is the X synchronization speed still 1/30 of a second like it was in the older ones?
It is, yes.
I think that's just got to do with the sheer size of the
curve. Probably.
Yeah. Although there is a lens you can get. I think it was a 90mm that has a leaf shutter.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they followed Bronica with that back.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that.
You can get leaf shutter lenses for the Pentax 645 as well. At least with the Pentax 645, you had a 1/60th of a second shutter sync speed. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a huge difference. And just, you know, shooting it, you know, locking up the mirror and shooting it with a leaf. You know, a lot of the times, what you have is actually slap with the shutter with this camera. Mm-hmm. So you can lose, if you're doing critical shots, you can sometimes see a bit of a double exposure or shift in the image because it's the shutter opening and closing, the shutter curtain actually opening and closing twice, and then obviously the camera moves when you're doing that. It's one of those things where you put this camera on a tripod, like you want to weight that tripod down with sandbags or even get a bungee cord and strap it to the bottom of the head and hold it down, like step on it, just to push all that, so there's no movement at all. It is a tank. It is literally a tank of a camera. And, it's not the easiest thing to shoot. But the image quality when you get it set up properly is amazing. But
just to add on to your point, if you're in the market for one, and especially if you're looking at one of the older models, I would suggest at least trying to get one of the ones that has a designation MLU for mirror lockup.
Yeah.
So that definitely. If you are running the long exposure on a tripod, use the mirror lockup, and then
that's an excellent point. Absolutely. Yeah. Get the one with the mirror lockup because without it, it limits what you can do with it for sure.
Yeah, so it's the 6.7 is less of a Pentax, more of a Panzertax.
Boom. Bum. And maybe they should have gone with a pellicle mirror on that one.
Yeah.
Just for the sheer.
Definitely.
Just out of curiosity, how much would one of those cameras range from?
Well, this newer version, you're probably, and this is in the Canadian marketplace, so I paid for this system, and this camera is pristine. Like, literally, when I got this camera, it was owned by a gentleman who collected model trains.
Okay.
And then decided that he needed another more expensive hobby called photography that we may all be familiar with. So just add a couple of zeros when you say photography. So he had really, what I was told by a reputable camera retailer from whom I got this camera, Joan at Burlington Camera. for those that don't know who Joan is, Joan is a very dangerous woman. But
stay away. Stay far away.
Cue the pusher.
She is a pusher. But she had told me, and I believe her, and the way the camera looks, literally only 10 rolls of film have gone through this camera. This camera is brand spanking new for a 20-year-old camera. So I paid $2,500 for this camera that came with the 55 3.5, which is an incredible piece of glass. This lens is actually very hard to find. A lot of times you'll see these cameras with a 100 2.4, which is sort of the classic sort of portrait lens. Yeah. Also an fantastic lens, but if you want to shoot some landscape or some you want the 55. They do make a 55 4.5, I believe, but the 3.5 is a little bit faster. Yeah. So I got this with the handle, the body, the lens, and the Pentax flash for $2,500. But I think this one's pretty spectacular of an example. On average, I would say you'd be looking in the probably the $1,000 to $1,500 range for one of the older bodies.
Yeah,
I see where they got the whole idea with the lens design on this, because I've got a Nikkor H3550 on my Bronica, and the way the glass is very, very similar. Huge front element on this thing. Now, of course, the 67, the camera is, or I should say the lens is significantly bigger, but just looking at the design of the Nikkor to the Pentax, it's a very, very similar design as far as the big front element.
Yeah, it's funny. You would think that the rear element would be, proportionally large as well, too, but it's considerably smaller on this lens, which I found rather surprising. But, it does have that big glass feel, yeah, the
big
images,
front element, and a much smaller rear element. Yeah. It's the same as the Nikkor H, so maybe possibly similar ideas.
Yeah,
so
who knows?
Probably some industrial espionage going on a few years ago, a few decades ago.
Well, I don't know how much that would really matter, since the Nikkor H, considering it's the Bronica S2 mount from late '60s. I don't think there's really that much of a patent that holds up it for even 30 years later, right?
We're already 4 months into the year, and it's shaping up to be an absolutely incredible year film-wise. We have Kodak bringing back Ektachrome closer to the end of the year. Ferrania has their P30, which I'll definitely be talking about when I finally get my rolls in. Lomography has introduced their F-squared film, which is aged like a fine single malt of Ferrania Solaris 400. But the film that two of our folks here have shot is actually from our friends at CineStill. And if you're unfamiliar with CineStill, they essentially use Kodak Vision 3 film, but before it comes to us, the consumers, they strip off the awful remjet layer, which is easy to take off if you do home developing. But if you don't want to do home developing color, you'd need to send this Vision 3 film off to special labs that specialize in the ECN2 process.
That's like the little film lab in the US.
Yeah, and old school photo lab in New Hampshire does that too. But if you don't want to do that, CineStill is a fantastic option. And they've just released a 120 version, which Bill and John have both had a chance to shoot. So take it away.
Okay. The story starts, I wind up wandering in the downtown camera, and I was on the list for an alpha, what they call an alpha roll. So this is literally the first production run of CineStill 800T, and we the consumers were basically the beta testers just to get the final quality control down. So I managed to score a roll. And they said, okay, you need to bring it back really fast. And of course, I got a cold that was haunting me most of the winter. So that kind of threw a wrench in it for 2 weeks. So I finally got around. I shot it through my Mamiya C220. I did long exposure night shots around Oakville, Ontario. And the results can be seen online on my Flickr feed. It is an amazing film for long exposure night photography. If your meter reads 8 seconds at f16, and I exposed at 800 ISO at box speed, by and large, you will get a great shot. You don't have to, like, say, for example, doing long exposure night work with, say, Ilford HP5, where the meter says 8 seconds, but with reciprocity, it's more like 25 seconds.
Or FOMO, when a meter says 90 seconds, or at least it's an hour and a half.
You don't have to worry about that with CineStill 800T. It is amazing for long exposure night work. I cannot recommend it enough. I can't wait to buy some production run for some more night photography work in the city.
Definitely. Yeah, the images that you posted are they're really stunning. Really stunning color.
Now, when I shot mine, like I basically went in on a Friday, and I said to them, you know, gosh, golly gee, I'm really sorry that I missed the alpha test. And I got the sense they might have had a roll or two left, so I turned on my legendary charm. And I managed to get a roll, but they said, you need to shoot it as quickly as possible. And I was heading out west again on the Sunday, so I basically had 24 hours or so to shoot it. And so I went out like the next day. And of course, you know, it's a bright, sunny day. And so I'm not sure I was really playing to the film's strength. One thing I'll mention,
this is a tungsten balanced film.
Okay. The first experience I had with it, I thought, okay, well, let's throw it in the Rolleiflex. And I put in the Rolleiflex, and if you know how the Rolleiflex detects the first frame, you know, by the thickness, it did not detect the first frame.
Oh, it skipped.
Just went all the way through. And, you know, that's not unheard of with Rolleiflex. I know that there have been, like, certain, like, a Sfema film had problems, you know, not being detected. It's all about the thickness of the tape. So what I did was I just basically wound it all the way through, threw it in the changing bag, rewound it, and then I threw it in my Hasselblad. And so I went out to Kensington Market in Toronto on a bitterly cold day. I shot it at 640, and even that's like, you know, 1/500th at f16.
Right.
One thing I'll say, like, I was very happy with the results. They were better than I expected, because normally that's not a bright, sunny day film. It handles overexposure no problem. You can really brutalize this film, I think. And I was shooting it actually without a filter. I had a brain fart and I didn't do it. But it was not as blue as I expected.
No.
And I had to apply a little bit of color correction, but really not bad at all. So like Bill was saying with his night shots, I look forward to shooting it again, but I think in like night work or interior architecture, where I think it would have its forte. But it's good to know that, you know, if it's all you have and it's a bright summer day out there, it's flexible enough.
Well, that about does it for this episode. My name's Alex Loke, saying if you have a problem and it needs fixing, call the K-Team.
This is James Lee. Go big or go home.
This is Bill Smith. Just keep on shooting.
This is Mike Pataxi. There's nothing like a Spotmatic.
This is Donna Pataxi, and keep that film rolling.
This is John Meadows. When it comes to Pentax, you can go Dr. Evil or you can go Mini-Me.